And Gulenshish for being here with us today. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein. And that you're listening to right there, those are those little suckers, those wonderful little sprites of the air, the hummingbirds that fascinate so many of us. I know I certainly am fascinated and have a hummingbird feeder out and all that during the season. We're going to ask more about that from the fireside lecture speaker tonight. Gwen Bayless is with us. She's a wildlife technician. She's going to be talking about our amazing hummingbird population we have here in Juneau. And Gwen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. That you sent a couple of samples of sound to listen to, and that was one of them. That was the Rufus. I think that was the Rufus hummingbird, the male Rufus hummingbird, kind of doing their display call. They are just like the Jack Russell Terriers of the air, aren't they? I mean, they just are. They're such an amazing, fun little creatures, full of life. Tell me a little bit about what brought you to be fascinated and interested and spend a lot of time studying hummingbirds.
Well, I've been interested in birds in general for a really long time. I've been studying them as sort of a career, I would say, although a seasonal field biologist is a career kind of in quotes, but I've been studying them for almost 30 years now, a long, long time. So I have a great interest in birds of all sizes. I've studied large ones such as the California condor, but it's more recently that I became interested in hummingbirds. As a bird bander, I had done a lot of songbird banding, but there was a biologist, Cheryl Carruthers, here with the Forest Service, who was involved in hummingbird conservation with the Western Hummingbird Partnership. And she really encouraged me to start banding hummingbirds and get into them. And
so,
it's just been a real wild
ride. That's an amazing thing to think about, banding a hummingbird. I've actually gotten to go out on mist netting. I went out on a mist netting one time at Creamer's Field up in Fairbanks, where they were banding songbirds, and they were very, very delicate, small little birds. But hummingbirds, a whole other level of delicate. How do you go about banding hummingbirds? Is it a netting type procedure? Is that what happens? Or tell me about that procedure.
Yeah, it can be. Some hummingbird banders do use nets, but I actually use a different system, which is a trap. It's called a hall trap, and it's a little bit easier up here where the hummingbirds are going to be really spread out to actually get them. It would be hard with the mist net because they move around a lot. But if you have a feeder, you can kind of rely on hummingbirds visiting that feeder. And so the trap actually goes up over the feeder, and it's like a little mesh hoop that falls down or that is you let go of a string and it falls down over the feeder. And so you can get the hummingbird that way. And it's nice because all the parts of that trap are fairly soft with like a rubber tube so that you don't have to untangle them the way that you would in a mist net. It's a little safer.
Yeah. And
requires training.
That struck me when I saw the mist netting that the birds really do get tangled up. All the birds that I observed were in good shape and everything was fine, but I definitely thought, wow, that might be a little hard on these creatures to be kind of tangled up in a net. So that is really interesting. So are you actually, when you do that, just fascinates me that you have a hummingbird trap. So you actually wait for it to get in and start feeding, and then you hit the little string and
that's exactly right. A volunteer is sitting there really patiently. I have wonderful volunteers, and you have to remember that it's probably cold or raining or a complete festival of biting insects or maybe a combination. And they're sitting there super quiet, holding a little string, just waiting for that hummingbird to come in and eat. Yes.
Well, tell me a little bit about some of the things that people may not know about hummingbirds. It's essentially when we see hummingbirds in Juneau, we're seeing the Rufus hummingbird. Do we sometimes see the Anna's hummingbird as well?
Yes, probably. So the Rufus is definitely our most common species, and especially during the breeding season, they're a summertime bird. And but we do get the Anna's, especially around feeders and settled areas. And what's interesting about the Anna's is that they can be here year round. You're actually more likely to see them in the fall or winter because they apparently don't migrate. They may move around, but they can survive colder temperatures.
Well, that was, I'm sure you get this question all the time, and it's about feeders. You know, when do I put it up? When do I take it down? Tell me a little bit about your advice there for people that have feeders.
Yeah, it's really just your preference. You're going to get the most action in the summer when the rufous are here. So a lot of people will put their feeders up starting pretty soon, around late March, early April, because we're going to start to get arrivals probably early April. You know, the date varies by how cold the spring is, but I think the record is like the 31st of March, but often you see them the first week of April and they ramp up throughout April. So that's a good time to put up the feeder. As far as taking them down, if you take them down in late summer, that's fine. The rufous usually leave late summer, early fall. But you can leave them up year-round in hopes of getting the annas in the off-season. That takes a little bit of dedication to keep it melted. Sometimes some people put up things like Christmas lights or light bulbs. There's a lot of different technologies out there. There's even heated feeders that you can buy. But you really need to kind of be on it as far as keeping that juice melted. And it's a myth that...
I was going to ask about this myth. I was going to say that's the myth I've heard. I've always felt like, oh my gosh, I'm going to kill the hummingbirds if I keep my feeder out too long or that kind of thing. So tell me about that. Yeah.
The rufous are pretty much hardwired to migrate. You can have as many feeders as you want and you're not going to convince them to do anything differently. The annas may actually be on a population level affected by feeders because we're perhaps creating habitat for them with the yards and the feeders and things like that. We don't really know why annas are spreading north, but it probably is helped by humans. And so with the annas, what you need to be concerned about, like if you have a feeder up in the fall, you want to probably keep it up. It's kind of a mean thing to do to just yank it in the middle of winter if you do have an annas that's coming every day and sort of relying on that. At least it's going to make a bad day for him. I don't know. You know, he'd probably move somewhere else. But so you'd probably want to decide in the late summer whether or not you're going to do the feeder over the winter. And most people don't. You know, they just do the rufous and the humming in the summer. But the only thing that you can really do wrong with feeders is to not clean them properly or to place them somewhere that's dangerous. So there's a lot of literature online, but you want to be very careful about keeping it clean and keeping them in a place that they're not drawing birds to other hazards, such as an uncovered window, for example.
Right. So and dyes and things like that in the actual food I've gather is not the preferred method, just sugar and water only, no honey, right? Those kinds
exactly.
of things, right?
Yep. Dye, not kosher. Other sweeteners, not good. It just plain old white granulated sugar, you know, boiled, cooled off, and then changed regularly with the feeder scrubbed out regularly.
And sort of a 4-to-1 ratio is my understanding, water to sugar. Is that right? 1/4 cup?
It can be... So up here where we have a lot of ambient water and colder temperatures, I usually recommend a little bit stronger mix for our birds. So that would be 1 cup of sugar and 3 cups of water as opposed to 4. So they can handle that. They like it a little stronger.
Great. That's great to know. Okay. I'm going to bring more in this year. I'm going to have the busiest feeder on the block. It's going to be great. Tell me, if it weren't for the feeders, what are Anna's hummingbirds eating? What are they eating in the winter? What can they subsist on in the winter when there's no flowers around?
Well, all hummingbirds also eat insects and maybe some other invertebrates like spiders. So there are a few bugs around, especially where there's freshwater upwelling. So they have been observed sort of getting these little hatches that we have of midges and things like that. But that's a pretty hard living. So probably the feeders are important. And then hummingbirds also will visit the tap wells that the local red-breasted sapsucker makes and get a little bit of sweet juice out of there. But most of the sapsuckers are also gone in the winter. So you know, honestly, we really don't know how the annas are surviving. They are amazing. They may be doing some frozen bugs like some of the other small insectivorous birds that we have living around here, like kinglets and things like that. They also have the ability to sleep a lot and lower their body temperature. So they may be holing up a lot, you know, some little crevice somewhere just waiting out the storms.
That's an interesting, yeah. You always wonder, what are the hummingbirds doing when we get hit with one of these really, you know, tremendous storm systems? And that's interesting. They do hole up. You know, you always, when you read about hummingbirds, you always just hear all the statistics about their heart rate and all the metabolism and how much energy they burn through in a day and how much they need to eat, all that stuff. And it just feels like, oh my gosh, if they don't get, you know, a cube of sugar a day, they're going to just perish. But it sounds like, obviously, they're a successful species. They're and Anna's, as you say, are even spreading north. So they have these other techniques, other ways of surviving.
Yeah, they're figuring it out. And it's really amazing. I will say that hummingbirds farther south, there are several species that venture up into the mountains, up into high altitudes. So it's not an entirely new thing for hummingbirds being able to deal with cold and difficult circumstances. And they probably, too, are doing something similar where they're going to go into torpor at night and wait for things to get better.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Fireside Lecture, just how people can join. It's going to be in person. Is that right?
It'll be a mix. So there will be in-person seats available, and I'm not sure where they are on that, but you have to like go online and get free tickets. And that information should be on the Visitor Center, U.S. Forest Service Menhall Glacier Visitor Center's Facebook page is probably the easiest way to find that. And then you can watch online via Facebook, and I believe it will also be recorded to look at later.
Yeah, and it's at 7 o'clock tonight.
That's correct.
So that's when people can either go in person. If you get one of those free tickets online, you can go in person, or you can just tune in watching it on Facebook. In person's always more fun, of course, but that you can get a lot of the great information on the Facebook page as well. And anything else you want to just cover about what you're going to be talking about, or anything that people should know that you're going to be interesting thing you're going to be talking about tonight?
Well, yeah, I think I don't want to spoil the talk.
I know. That's right.
I really appreciate the Visitor Center putting away the fireside despite COVID, and it'll be a pleasure to speak to everyone.
Well, it's going to be great. I'm sure you're going to get inundated with questions just like I have from people. Hummingbirds, of course, one of the most wonderful little creatures to be able to observe, and they're so fantastic because you get the chance to observe them so readily by having a hummingbird feeder in here in Juneau, and they're really a wonderful part of summer, especially. But as you say, if you have the perseverance to keep a feeder up all winter long, you can get Anna's in even through the winter. Gwen, thanks so much for joining us today. It's really great to talk to you. That's Gwen Bayless, and she's a wildlife technician and going to be talking at the Fireside Lecture Theater tonight at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center for the Fireside Lecture series. And thanks so much for joining us, Gwen, today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.